Welcome to the journal.ie's The Explainer. This episode is brought to you by our investigative platform Noteworthy, where we carry out journalistic projects based on ideas sent to us by the public. I'm Susan Daly. Now, Noteworthy recently published two articles by reporter Stephen Fox on the state's failure to tackle commercial exploitation of our bogs. These were part of an extensive cross-border investigation with reporters based in Germany and Italy. Stephen focused on actions by two state companies, Quilce and Bordnemona, and looked at the planting of forestry and the development of wind farms on our precious peatland. This comes in the backdrop of Ireland being referred by the European Commission to the European Court of Justice over the state's failure to halt industrial peat extraction. There is much at stake here. Our bogs are considered a key weapon in battling the dual climate and biodiversity crisis. Now, Stephen is here to tell us about some of the findings of his investigation, and we're also very lucky to have reporter Svante Furtok, who examined wetlands in Germany for this project. She will share insights into this exploitation as it has been happening there. Welcome, Stephen, and welcome, Svante.
Thanks, Susan.
Hello.
Now, Stephen, we're going to start with the basics, and I apologise to anybody who studied junior cert geography in Ireland who will recognise some of the terminology, but I think it's important that we begin to understand what exactly peatland or wetland means to us in Ireland.
Very simply, peatland is an area of land with very poor drainage, so it has quite a high amount of flooding. What this means then is that plant and animal life that maybe dies in the area isn't able to fully decompose. And then this allows for a particular type of moss called sphagnum moss to develop, which then turns into peat. Ireland is one of the highest percentages of peat per landmass in Europe. I think the only one more than us is Finland. And the most common type of bog in Ireland are blanket bogs. They account for about 80% of cover. They would be quite shallow, maybe 3 to 4 meters. The raised bogs are much rarer, but they're also significantly deeper, so they've been developing over a significantly longer amount of time. The bogs in the areas that we covered were raised bogs, and they're much more of a concern in Ireland as they're much rarer habitats.
And the raised bogs, whereabouts in Ireland would we find those, Stephen?
Primarily around the Midlands, one of the areas that we covered was in County Longford. A lot of Bordnemona's activity would have been in the Midlands for peat extraction. Once you get out to the western seaboard, then it's primarily blanket bogs instead.
And Stephen, you mentioned Bordnemona there. They obviously are one of the key managers of peatland in Ireland. Would that be right?
Yeah, they would be. The two big players when it comes to peatland would be Bordnemona, so the Turf Board. They were initially set up in the 1940s to manage peat extraction as a way of giving Ireland an independent fuel supply. They've since transitioned now over to a climate solutions company, so they deal primarily with green and renewable energy. And then the other player would be Quilce, the forestry management agency. Between the two of them then, they control, it's about approximately 7% of Ireland's landmass.
And Svante, you're hearing us talk about the importance of peatlands in Ireland. They're a little bit different in Germany. What are peatlands like there?
We have two different kinds of peatlands. So we also have bogs like you do, but we also have fens, which are more towards the east side of Germany. And the main difference of both is where they get their water from. So in Ireland, the bogs are mostly rainwater fed, but in Germany, we also have that second type of peatland, which is fen. And these are groundwater fed as well, meaning that they get way more nutrients and there is different plant composition there. So you'd find reed and sedges and also, of course, like different animals and birds.
And when you mentioned the different animals and birds, Svante, of course, that brings us to the fact that whatever type of peatland, they're all unique habitats for wildlife. What does that make them important for climate change, Svante?
Well, of course, they are home to very unique species. And in Germany, we have that problem that we drain 95% of our peatlands. Not that we would, like we also have turf cutting here, but mostly we drain them for agriculture, meaning nowadays you wouldn't recognize these peatlands. They just look like meadows where you have cows on there or you have potatoes that are planted. So actually, these species that lived there before, they don't have a home anymore. And of course, there are also different features of the peatlands that are important, like the water storage or the filtering of nutrients. And all these abilities are being lost due to this heavy usage that we have there.
And the mention of, I mean, 95% is an absolutely astounding figure, particularly for people from Ireland to hear when we're so protective of our bogs and worried about what's been happening with them. You mentioned their importance in biodiversity and carbon footprint and so on. I guess the primary importance is as a carbon sink, if you could explain to us what that is.
Yeah, for sure. Like Stephen actually explained in the beginning, this organic matter that dies in peatland is conserved in the water, and that is actually where the carbon is conserved. And peatlands are globally considered as the largest terrestrial carbon store. So they store twice as much carbon as all world's forests combined, which is an impressive number if they only cover 3% of the landmass. And actually, like, they are our heroes in climate change. Like, if we preserve them, we had a huge natural carbon store. The problem is that if you drain a peatland for agriculture or for turf cutting, that the peat layer gets exposed to oxygen because you take the water out and the peat decomposes to greenhouse gases. So whilst peatland in their wet state are actually massive carbon sinks, they now become carbon sources and emit great amounts of greenhouse gases.
And Stephen, we are looking at Germany there and thinking, God, that is a frightful situation. But bogs have been historically exploited here as well. Can you tell us why that's been happening?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of it comes down to the perception of the land. Generally, it's been considered waste. It's not like it can be reclaimed for agriculture, but it's not an easy thing to do, especially for any sort of intensive agriculture, because the land has to be continually drained, especially if it's in any sort of floodplain. It very quickly refloods. It's very expensive. The soil itself is quite acid prone, so not a lot of things can grow there. So generally, it's been used for things. If it's being used for agriculture, it's being used for things like sheep or goats. And then obviously, as Fancha was saying, that when you drain it, it then becomes a carbon emitter as opposed to a carbon sink. In Ireland, then we've two main ways that it's been exploited. First is a fuel source. So I touched on briefly before, Borden Amona, industrial peat extraction. And then even aside from industrial extraction for fuel, it's been used as a domestic source of fuel for far longer, for centuries, right up until today. And even it's how my own home throughout my childhood was heated. We went down to the bog every summer, cut turf, brought it home, burned turf, and that's how we kept ourselves warm during the winter.
And Stephen, we know that there has been quite an awareness of protecting, rehabilitating bogs in Ireland. So there is ongoing cutting. What are the state of our peatlands now?
They could certainly be in better shape. Ireland has lost about 80% of our peatlands to exploitation. We used to have a 17% coverage of peatland. The only country that had a higher coverage that I mentioned before was Finland in Europe. But that being said, there is, like, at least on the surface, there is a commitment to protecting and rehabilitating bogs from both environmentalists and from the state and semi-states. The issue comes down to a disagreement. It's a matter of degrees, really. Environmentalists and experts don't think that the state or their semi-states are doing nearly enough to protect them. The question ultimately comes down to whether we can exploit and rehabilitate bogs, or whether we can only exploit or rehabilitate bogs. The state say that you can do both. You can plant forestry, build wind farms, do all that kind of stuff, while also being able to rehabilitate them successfully. And environmental groups just say, like, fundamentally, that's not possible.
I think we should deep dive into what they're saying we can continue to do while protecting the bogs. And you mentioned very specifically, and these were the focus of your investigations, the use of peatlands for forestry and wind farms. You visited some sites, Stephen, is that right?
Yeah. So there were two sites that we visited, one from Borden Amona, one from Caolte. The Borden Amona site was in Longford, which would have historically been kind of the centre of their operations throughout their existence. Formerly, it was a peat extraction site, and you could still see when we went out there the tracks they would have used to extract the turf, the tracks from machinery going in, the cutaway from the work being done. But now it's the site of a wind farm, proposed wind farm, the Derriard wind farm. So it'll be built across the Derriard, Derriarogue and Lochbano bogs. And then on the Caolte side of things, we went to the Wicklow Mountains, which holds the largest proportion of the Caolte's forestry estate. And specifically, we went around Loch Dan. So the river flowing into it, which is the Inchivore, and the river flowing out of it, which is the Avonmore.
I'm going to come back to you on those sites, Stephen, to find out exactly what the problem is with doing those activities there. Lockdown is one I tramped around myself quite a lot in the past. It's a beautiful area. Svante, is peatland being exploited to the same extent in Germany? I know we talked about the drainage issues there for agriculture earlier. What did you examine?
Yeah, so as I said earlier, like there's also a small proportion where people cut the turf here. But actually, our biggest issue is actually usage for agriculture, because there has been this perception that peatlands are only valuable if you drain them, because if you put drainage channels in there, then you have, again, a rather dry meadow where you could put your cows on or plant like potatoes and stuff. But nowadays that we know so much about the emissions of drained peatlands, there is actually this need for a shift where scientists are saying we can't keep them in a drained state, we need to re-wet them, and we actually need to shift our complete agriculture. And there is this idea which is called paludiculture, meaning that we would re-wet the peatland and put water on there again and just cultivate different plants. So I don't know, put reed on there and use that as insulation material, or put water buffaloes instead of cows. So plants and animals that can live with the water. But this is like a massive shift that we're standing in front of, because of course all the agriculture payments, they are mostly subsidizing actually drained peatlands, and as well like the farmers, they experienced only draining the peatlands for generations. So this is a bit the challenge that we have in Germany at the moment.
It's difficult to make people pivot. We examined in Noteworthy previously how farms are being asked to, I suppose, look at subsidies that help them move more towards the restoration of nature, which of course we're against the backdrop of that larger legislation in the EU. We found that a lot of these subsidies weren't effective, they weren't results-based and so on. The driver for getting farmers in Germany to change what they're doing, to put the water buffaloes on or whatever the scheme is that can help with this, are there subsidies trying to encourage farmers? Are people taking them up? Are they being tested?
Yeah, very slowly, I would say. Like actually, the main subsidies that are existing are still rather funding the drainage, but there has been a shift in the common agriculture policy that also funding for paludiculture has been developed, but it's very complicated and bureaucratic to actually apply for that. And also our federal states try to provide extra programs for the farmers. But again, like being a farmer and actually needing to do the work on the farm, if you have extra bureaucracy, that's of course actually keeping you from changing. It should be made way more easier. And also I'm not quite sure if like we're in the shift phase, if the money is sufficient, because if you want to re-wet a peatland, it's not just that your whole agriculture scheme shifts or your whole agriculture activity shifts, but you also need to block the drainage and rebuild the whole area in first place. And the shift is also very expensive, and you need new machinery as well. So there is actually a lot of money needed, and it's very complicated still for farmers who want to change.
That sounds like a huge level of multi-layers of support needed, and they're not there. Stephen, we'll go back to Ireland then, and you went to the Derriad site in Longford. I'm really interested in hearing about this. What were the concerns that were raised there, I suppose largely by environmentalists, around the effect of that proposed wind farm development?
So the main concern that the environmental groups had at Derriad was the effect that the proposed wind farm development could have on the bird habitats on the site. So it's an important feeding, nesting and resting site for a number of species that are of conservation concern. So for instance, whooper swans, lapwings, curlews, merlins. On top of this, then the proposed footprint of the turbines, it backs on to the Loch Ree Special Area of Conservation and the Special Protected Area, both which are outlined in the EU's Habitat Directive. So at the moment, though, the concern isn't necessarily the building of the turbines. That's actually quite a few years off. What the concern is at the moment is, and what's most pressing, is the drainage of the site that's required to build them. And also the drainage that Bord na Móna says is required for rehabilitation, which is a point of contention between them and environmentalists. So the bird species that are present on the site need it to be flooded so that they can feed, so they can nest and rest, The lapwings, for instance, they nest on peat islands that are protected from predators by the water level. But then if the water level is pumped too low, this changes, their nests become quite vulnerable. Now, Bord and Mona, they obviously disagree. And they say when we contacted them, they said the pumping was necessary for rehabilitation works on the site and that it must continue until the rehabilitation has been completed because it was needed to maintain a water level that was conducive to this rehabilitation.
Drainage will continue until morale improves. But Bord and Mona are saying that it's absolutely necessary, as you say. And this is the backdrop as well. We've looked at biodiversity before, but 2/3 of Ireland's native bird species are at some level of risk on the extinction scale. So that's really hard to hear. And Svante, you were going to add something there to that.
I just wanted to say that actually, if you keep draining it, it of course constantly emits, and we have the climate targets, and it's difficult to reach them, I guess.
Stephen, water is also the theme for when we looked at what forestry plantations are doing on peatland when you travel to the Wicklow Mountains. Will you tell us why it's an issue?
Yeah, so the main issue that environmentalists have seen in the Wicklow Mountains then is that these plantations on peat have the potential to cause serious damage to water bodies in the Wicklow Mountains. And this is especially pressing because of the EU's Water Framework Directive, under which Ireland have to bring their water bodies up to a high or good quality by 2027. The problem there is that a lot of the Quilta plantations and the ones that we looked at in the Avonmore area sit on slopes above the river bodies, and they're marked for clear felled. And the clear felling is when you have one big plantation, you fell all the trees within a few weeks of each other. This then leaves your peat soil quite dislodged, quite loose. All it takes is one heavy amount of rain comes along, washes that peat soil down into the rivers. The peat soil itself is incredibly acidic. So then you're left with water bodies that have just been poisoned for fish life, for plant life. Especially Ireland is one of the main habitats in Europe for freshwater pearl mussel, which I know that we've worked on in Noteworthy before. So they're at serious risk from that.
And what is Quilta saying about that then, Stephen? As much as we went to Bord and Mona about this, are they saying there is an issue with the scale of what's happening?
So we reached out to Quilta and they said, look, we have enough things in place to mitigate our practices leading to these failures. They laid out the criteria of their sites for what they do in determining the viability of forestry plantations. They said if it was capable of producing a good yield of trees, it would be replanted. If it wasn't, then it would be rehabilitated as peatland if that was possible. And then if that wasn't possible, then it would be rewilded and returned to native habitats. And then all of this, they said, was done in accordance with their responsibilities towards water quality.
I'm going to pull at a particular thread here as we just kind of try and wrap up all of these problems that we're hearing. And are there solutions? Is it going to continue as it is? And we've been speaking a lot about EU legislation and EU directives. There might be a perception that, well, the EU is telling us what to do. But largely these targets are to do with, we'll try and get your water quality to be better. We'll try and contribute to reducing the carbon footprint and so on. So really, on the face of it, quite reasonable targets. The EU Nature Restoration Law, we've all heard a lot about it in Ireland too because of our agricultural economy. Svante, you wrote an article in Germany about the restoration law. It was in the news earlier. There was a essentially watered-down version agreed. How would this law impact peatlands as it stands?
It's a very interesting and complex topic, I think. Together with two other journalists in Germany, we tried to investigate a bit the push against the Nature Restoration Law because actually it was the first law that wanted to set targets for restoring damaged ecosystems in every EU country. What we saw was that actually peatlands were one of the core critique points within that law, because there is a huge fear in Germany, but also in different European countries, that peatlands that are currently being used for agriculture, for example, that they would be restored and not usable anymore in future. So within the debate of the parliament, the Conservative Party tried to push back the law and watered it down and argued heavily for taking Article 9 out of the law, which had set targets for peatlands. And what we also saw was that they started a big social media campaign where they said this law would endanger global food security, and it's just senseless re-wetting villages that have been built 100 years ago. So they even try to raise the fear amongst farmers and make them more angry. And I mean, we saw the results with farmers being out in the streets earlier this year in different European countries.
We saw a similar debate here and a lot of disappointment with the nature restoration law and the performance of politicians from all countries around it. Stephen, with the EU, it was also announced that the European Commission has referred Ireland to the EU's Court of Justice over our failure to protect the peat bogs from turf cutting. What can we expect to happen there, if you don't mind?
The main issue there was with peat extraction. So back in 2011, the Commission wrote to Ireland and said that more had to be done to halt peat extraction and also to rehabilitate the bogs that were remaining. At the time, it was met by resistance from the government. It was met by resistance from communities that rely on turf as a fuel source and from their TDs. This year, then, the Commission formally referred Ireland to the European Court of Justice and said that not enough had been done on this point. The Irish government have stood their ground on their turf plan. They say they're going to fight it. As far as I'm aware, the next step then will be for the ECJ to decide whether or not the Commission has a case. If they do, then I expect this case to go on for a number of years. So we won't see the result. We won't see the result of it in this decade, maybe.
So if we leave the EU action aside, then what else are environmental campaigners calling for in Ireland in the meantime?
Well, it goes back to that question that I raised about the exploitation and rehabilitation versus exploitation or rehabilitation. For instance, in the case of Quilcha, a lot of environmentalists say that there isn't a case for planting trees on peat, which Quilcha maintains is a viable practice. But this is something that environmentalists have actually got expert backing on. A 2016 report by the Environmental Protection Agency recommended the cessation of forestry on peat soils due to the damage that they can do to water quality. One of the main alternatives in forestry that they're looking at is continuous cover forestry with native trees. So what this means is that we would plant native trees on appropriate sites and then maintain them, thin them where necessary, but you would have a constant cover of native woodland. Things wouldn't be clear felled in the same way. And then on upland peat areas where the suitability for trees just isn't there, you would block drains, allow the land to re-wet and rehabilitate the bogs as bogs. The problem, though, at least with the environmentalists that I spoke to, is that a lot of these sites just, they have been drained for too long. They won't be able to be rehabilitated as peatland in the way that they were. So any efforts are not wasted, but they are certainly
coming a little too late, perhaps.
A bit, yeah, I think so.
If I may jump in there, because there is my peatland professor always, like, because I studied biochemistry before, and my peatland professor always said that you can't rehabilitate the same bog that you had before, but it becomes a new one. So maybe it's also embracing this, what new peatland will be there, because we'll probably face the same issue in Germany with these heavily drained ones.
It sounds like a positive note to end on, Svante. I want to thank you both for coming in and explaining to us the many challenges. It doesn't sound like there is a simple solution to a very complex problem. Peatlands are an emotive and symbolic landscape in Ireland and beyond. And we can see there that preservation and industrial exploitation of various hues are in a very tense and crisis standoff at the moment, with the climate crisis as a backdrop and various EU targets dangling overhead. So we will have to keep an eye on this space and see what happens next. Thanks so much, Svante and Stephen, for coming in and sharing the findings of your investigations, your trips, your FOIs and your questions to these bodies about what they are doing with peatlands and what we should be doing into the future. You have been listening to The Explainer, brought to you by noteworthy.ie. It was produced by Laura Byrne. If you want to learn more about our work at Noteworthy and how we source our stories from you, our readers and listeners, head to our site at noteworthy.ie. And you can sign up to our newsletter, which gives you an insider look at our latest investigations by visiting noteworthy.ie/newsletter. Thanks for having us, and we'll see you next time.